Well, it's great to be here. My first time at Perimeter, and I just sense a lot of energy and enthusiasm in this room tonight. And it's so exciting that on a Wednesday night, we've got a large group of parents out. Tonight, I want to talk to you about a subject that is very near and dear to my heart, and that is kids. I'm a child and family psychologist by training, but you know, in the last couple of years, last six, 7 years or so, I've been getting some very practical training in child rearing. You see, I didn't get married until I was 40. So believe it or not, I have 3 kids under 7 at home. Yeah, I kind of feel like Abraham in the Old Testament. God has blessed me with offspring in my old age. My wife's a little younger, so she's still hanging in there. Now, we have a 6-year-old son, we have a 4-year-old daughter, and we have a 2-year-old daughter. And you know how new parents are always, and many of you are new parents, you know how you're always bragging about your kids and you're pulling out pictures to show everybody. And I would never do that to you, except that you're a captive audience, so you're out of luck tonight. This is my son, Joseph, this is his first day of kindergarten here earlier this year. He has that name tag on so he doesn't forget who he is. That's so the teacher knows who they all are. And Joseph is a delightful little boy. He's very creative, loves to make up songs and stories. He's very artistic, loves to play soccer. And this kid is becoming a theological whiz. I'm reading the Chronicles of Narnia to him right now, and he's asking me all these deep theological questions that I'm not C.S. Lewis, so I can't really answer them, but I do my best. And he just provides a lot of entertainment and fun in our family. Then we have Anna. The moms always do that. They always, she's 4, and she is daddy's little girl, and she is just so affectionate and fun. And the other day she said to me, she said, "Daddy, I love you more. I love you more than all the way to the sun and back at night. And I love you more than all the way to the moon and back during the day." And then she said, "And I love you more. I love you until the numbers stop. And the numbers never stop." Like, oh, gosh. Isn't that sweet? And then we had our bonus baby. This is our bonus. How many of you have had a bonus baby? You don't have? Yes, a few of you. Planning on having those two, that boy and that girl. And then God had other plans. And we got that pregnancy test and went, felt like 2 teenagers. And it wasn't, not that we didn't want to have 3 kids, but it's just that, you know, me being 50 years old, by the time my kids get to high school, you know, I'll be the guy in the walker in the audience. Say, "That's my dad out there. Yeah, he's blind now, but he's here." So this is little Eva, who just turned 2. And yesterday she decided to open the salt shaker and pour it all over the kitchen table. Oh, and also I heard this little scraping sound. So I went out to the kitchen and we have these chairs that are kind of covered with leather. And I'm, "What's that scraping sound?" And so she's got salt all over it and she's scraping it into the leather. My wife was, needless to say, not real excited about that. So those are our kids. And we are tremendously blessed. Mother's Day coming up in just a few weeks. Guys, don't forget that is May 11th. That's May 11th. Write that down or you will be in the doghouse for a long time to come, especially if you have a new baby. Sometimes, this happened to me, guys, our first Mother's Day after my baby was born. I had always been, because I was an older, you know, bachelor, and I always been thinking Mother's Day is my mom. You know, send mom a card, call mom. Of course, now my wife is a mom, and we have this, you know, brand new 6-month-old baby, but somehow I just didn't make the connection that now this is her Mother's Day, too. So I forgot. I'll never hear the end of that ever again. So don't forget, guys, May 11th. And then Father's Day coming up just a few weeks after that in June. And for those of you who are dads, you might be interested to know that every year there is an organization called the National Center for Fathering. And, oh, how'd that get up there? In case you thought my kids were always cute and sweet, this proves otherwise. This was not Halloween, by the way. This was April. We came out at 6:30 in the morning and found them sitting there in their Halloween costumes. You can see we have a very tired giraffe and a very depressed ladybug. A little Prozac couldn't help. But yeah, that's when they were a little bit younger. Anyway, this organization called the National Center for Fathering has this essay contest every year where school kids submit their essays on what my father means to me. And they probably have about 100,000 entries every year. And then they pick some of the best creations. I thought I'd share a few of those with you. Here's one from a first grader. My dad is the best dad ever. I would kiss a pig for him. Okay. Another first grader wrote this one. My dad is a Frito-Lay man. That is an important job because Frito-Lay means chips, which is food. That is so important because you could not live without food. Budding nutritionist there. Third grader, the dad in my life isn't really my dad. He's my grandpa. But he's been like a dad to me since before I was born. I hope that as I get older, grandpa will teach me all the stuff he knows about wood and first aid and everything else he knows about. My grandpa isn't my father, but I wouldn't trade him for all the dads in the world. That's very powerful because obviously this little boy doesn't have a dad, and yet grandfather has stepped into that role, and that's happening all across this country. We have millions and millions and millions of grandparents who are now raising their grandkids as their own children because their adult children, for some reason, are incapable of carrying out that task of parenting. So if we have any grandparents here today, I commend you. Here's one from a fourth grader. Sometimes as a joke, I'll put my stinky socks in his briefcase. So at work the next day, he will think of me. He's always at the concerts and plays that I'm in, even though he lives about an hour away. Now, there's something behind that story. Dad lives an hour away, obviously a child of divorce, but dad is still very involved in this child's life, which is wonderful. Fifth grader. You know what else my dad does? He braids my hair. I'm the only girl I know whose dad braids her hair. I think that's a perfect dad. He already is the world's greatest dad to me. I just wanted everyone else to know that. Here's a sixth grader. One time I had an assembly and I was a soloist and my dad was in the first row. And after my song, I smiled at my dad and my dad smiled back and started crying. That was the best thing I ever saw. And finally, this one from a seventh grader. Fatherhood is a lifelong commitment. I've seen through my father's actions, words, and decisions that he will be committed to me and my life from the second I was born, almost 13 years ago, to the day I die. Even if you assembled the most brilliant team of scientists and artists there was, there still is no possible way you could duplicate my father. Wow, some profound words from a seventh grade student. You know, like all parents, my wife Lisa and I have a lot of hopes and dreams for our kids. We pray that they will grow up to love God and to follow his precepts. We also pray that Joseph, Anna, and Eva will grow up to become adults who demonstrate things like strong moral character, who demonstrate compassion for others who are less fortunate than themselves. But I got to be honest with you. I'm very concerned about the world my kids are going to be growing up in. And I'm guessing many of you are as well. As a psychologist, one of my areas of research interest is the impact that our culture has on kids. And tonight, I want to give you a glimpse into the life of the average American child. Some of the facts I'm going to share with you may shock you. Some of them may depress you, frankly. Some of them may make you really, really angry. My goal is to educate you, to equip you, and maybe even shake you up a little bit tonight. As parents, some of you grandparents, as leaders in your church and in your community, I believe it's very critical that you be informed about some of the issues that are facing our kids in today's world. And after we look at some of these realities, after we look at some of these stark facts, we're going to discuss a few ideas that you may want to incorporate into your own parenting to equip your kids to boldly stand up for Christ in their own sphere of influence. And if you're a grandparent, you may want to share this information with your adult children as they raise their own kids. The fact is that kids are at risk. They're at risk in your congregation. They're at risk in your community. Perhaps they're even at risk in your own home. How many of you are familiar with Plugged In website or Plugged In magazine from Focus on the Family? Many of you. For those of you that don't know, Plugged In is our media website that reviews movies and TV shows and video games and music and provides parents with the information they need to make wise choices, discerning choices for their kids' media experience. Well, the Plugged In folks compiled a bunch of facts, a bunch of stats on the media habits of American children and teenagers, and I thought I'd share a few of those with you. American kids spend an average of 8 hours and 33 minutes immersed in some kind of media every day. That would include television, radio, music, magazines, computers, the internet, texting, video games, you name it. It's basically a full-time job for them if you think about the number of hours they're spending in some kind of tech experience. 68% of 8 to 17-year-olds have a television in their own room. 37% have cable or satellite access. 20% of 2-year-olds and more than 30% of 3 to 6-year-olds have a TV in their own bedroom, which is shocking to me, but true. 53% of 8 to 18-year-old kids say their parents have no rules about what they watch on television. Of the remaining half of the kids who say their parents do have rules, the vast majority say these rules are enforced only some of the time, a little of the time, or never. Now, this is just inviting trouble, folks, because, as you know, so many TV shows and cable movies today feature graphic violence and sexual content. Multiple studies are now confirming that kids who watch a lot of violent media or play a lot of violent video games are more likely to be aggressive. They're also less likely to feel empathy when they see other human beings suffer. And that really makes a lot of sense if you think about it. Think about the video game Postal, which is that the object is to go into a post office and blow away as many innocent bystanders as you can in, 60 seconds. Well, once you're doing that over and over and over again, it starts to desensitize you to the fact that real human beings, at least in this video game, are suffering and dying. And we know that many of the school shooters, including the Columbine shooters, were obsessed with violent video games and violent music and films as well. What about the web? Well, more than 76% of kids ages 3 to 17 in the United States have access to a computer at home. The stat's a couple years old. I'm guessing that number has increased. There are still some areas of the country where kids don't have computers, or very low-income kids may not have access to a computer, at least at home. They may have it in the library or school. 64% of teenagers say they do things online they wouldn't want their parents to know about. So they were honest with the researchers, but they're not being honest with their folks. 70% of 15 to 17-year-olds have looked at pornography online. Pornography is becoming a huge, huge issue among teenage boys and now preteen boys. And more, unfortunately, teenage girls as well. 20% of kids in America have been solicited online for sex, usually through email, texting, or chat rooms. This is not always by an adult perpetrator, by the way. This could be by an age mate or a peer who's slightly older. You could have a, 12-year-old girl who is solicited by a 15-year-old boy that she knows in the neighborhood or through school. And about a quarter of the kids this has happened to report that they were very, very frightened by this particular experience. Something that you need to know about, and there's, of course, a variety of filtering software and tracking software. Focus on the Family has, in the last year or two, made these various softwares available to families, and you can check out our website to learn more about that. Now, let's talk about texting for a second. And I know most of you probably have younger kids, but how many have preteen or teenage kids in this room? Raise your hand. Oh, many of you. Well, you know that texting is the modern form of communication among preteens and teenagers. In fact, a lot of parents I'm talking to these days are starting to feel very overwhelmed by all of the high-tech forms of communication their kids are involved in, such as texting, instant messaging, social networking sites like Facebook, MySpace. And if you're a teenager or preteen is not texting, I'm kind of surprised, But here are a few text messages you should know. Let me give you a little text message quiz here. I'm going to show you a couple of common text message abbreviations used by teens. And if you know what this stands for, just shout it out. Some of these you'll probably know right off. What's that? Parent over shoulder. Okay? How about this? That is code for buying or selling marijuana. 420. This? Keeping parents clueless. And finally, naked in front of computer. You can see that text messaging, while on the one hand it keeps kids connected, can also lead them in a very, very bad direction. Let's move on to drug and alcohol use among kids. 37% of teens have smoked marijuana, 9% have used ecstasy, 8% have used meth. Prescriptions and over-the-counter drug usage is rising. 18% of teens have used Vicodin, 10% have tried OxyContin, 10% have used prescription stimulants such as Ritalin without a doctor's orders, 9% have abused over-the-counter cough medicines. There's a new phenomenon called robo-tripping. How many have heard of that? There's a rap star that made that particular phrase common. Robo-tripping is where you take a large amount of over-the-counter cough syrup, which has an ingredient in it that causes a high in large amounts. Unfortunately, it can also lead to death, but the kids don't know that. They think it's kind of cool and hip to get high on cough syrup. In a survey of 1,000 teens, a third of them said it was easier to buy marijuana than to buy cigarettes. 28% said they knew somebody who'd used ecstasy. 10% said they'd been to a rave party and that ecstasy was available at 70% of those parties. Those parties happen typically in major metropolitan areas on a Friday or Saturday night. You'll see the posters on telephone poles, such and such a party, and it's usually at a warehouse that the organizers have rented out. They brought in a bunch of sound and light equipment, and then the kids go in there and dance, and unfortunately ecstasy is the kind of the dancing drug of choice. Also, it's not a controlled substance and often can lead to death. One of the things ecstasy does is it raises your body temperature, sometimes to the point where it actually cooks your central nervous system, and it can kill on the first dose, but kids don't know that. Now, are we surprised by this? Because only 25% of teens, 25%, one out of four in America, live with hands-on parents who've set a household culture of rules and expectations for their teens' behavior. By the way, one of the new things that kids are doing is called farming parties, spelled P-H-A-R-M, like pharmaceuticals. And what they do is all the kids go to their parents' medicine cabinets and they take their prescription antidepressants or anti-anxiety medications or who knows what they've got in their sleep medications, and they bring them to this party. All the kids throw the pills into a big bowl and then they reach in, grab a handful, and down it with a beer or whiskey. Who knows what kind of combination they're getting there? But it's becoming more and more popular among teens and unfortunately among preteens as well. How about kids and booze? Okay, here's a stat that may surprise you. The percentage of kids who report drinking alcohol in the past 30 days, breaking it down by age, 17% of eighth graders, 33% of 10th graders, and about half of seniors have had booze in the last 30 days. And sometimes that involves binge drinking, which is drinking five or more alcoholic beverages at one sitting, which we know is very common on college campuses, but more and more it's hitting after football games, high school football games, and you know, you name it, prom parties. Well, let's move on to sexual issues, something we need to address as parents. I don't need to tell you our kids are growing up in a highly sexualized culture. Here are a few stats on teen sexuality you should know. 47% of high school students reported having sexual intercourse, about half. 14% of today's teens said they've had sex with multiple partners, defined as sex with four or more different persons in their short lifespan. 54% of teen girls, 55% of teen boys have had oral sex. And a poll by 17 Magazine revealed that 56% of the kids don't even think that oral sex is really sex. I don't know where they could have got that idea, maybe a former president, but I'm not going to get political on you. But I will tell you that a friend of mine who works in the area of sexual purity tells me that when she speaks at high schools around the country, many of the kids at the schools, public schools, refer to oral sex as Christian sex. That sounds a little strange, but it's because the Christian kids won't have sexual intercourse, but they will have oral sex because they think they're remaining virgins. So the non-Christian kids refer to that as Christian sex. Does media have an impact on our kids' sexual behavior? You bet. RAND Corporation did a study. They said they found that teens who watch TV programs with a lot of sexual content are twice as likely to engage in sexual intercourse than their peers who watch few such programs. Twice as likely. And a new research by the RAND just came out this past year showing they're also twice as likely to get pregnant out of wedlock. By the way, the same thing applies to music with highly sexualized lyrics. Well, I have to tell you something depressing about depression and suicide. U.S. teens are experiencing symptoms of serious depression at higher rates than any generation in modern history. Nationwide, about 17% of students have seriously considered attempting suicide in the previous 12 months. And this is interesting. Heritage Foundation found this. About 25% of sexually active girls between the ages of 14 and 17 say they are depressed most or a lot of the time. Only 8% of abstinent girls feel the same way. So the girls that are engaging in sexual activity are by and large more depressed than the girls that are remaining sexually pure. And unfortunately, depression leads to suicide. Suicide rates for kids and teens have quadrupled since the 1950s. There's a lot of reasons for that. I think family breakdown is probably one of the primary ones, but there are some other cultural factors as well. Suicide is now the third leading cause of death for kids between the ages of 15 and 19. Girls are almost twice as likely as boys to think about suicide or to try to take their own lives. Girls are more likely to think about it. Boys are more likely to be successful at it. That's because boys use more lethal methods, typically such as a gun or hanging themselves. Where a girl may pop a lot of pills, she may take a whole bottle of Tylenol, but she's discovered, they get her to the hospital in time, and she's saved. So girls are more likely to be thinking about it, but boys are more likely to actually follow through and be successful at it. Well, I see a lot of heavy faces in the audience right now, and obviously these statistics are very disturbing. They disturb me as a parent of three young kids. But you know what's equally troubling to me is that there are some powerful multi-million dollar organizations in this country that are targeting our kids with deceptive and dangerous ideas. And I would submit to you that they are seducing America's children and selling them a bill of goods. And I'm going to share just a few with you. America's kids are being targeted with something that some experts refer to safe sex ideology. And the organizations involved in this are Planned Parenthood, Advocates for Youth, an organization called the Sexuality Information and Education Council of the U.S., or SECUS, kind of a shadow organization in Washington, D.C. These groups are all pro-abortion. They all basically encourage kids to engage in sexual promiscuity. They have infiltrated many public schools in America with their radical sex ed agenda. And their basic message is to kids, just do it. As long as you use a condom, everything will be fine. But you know, everything isn't fine. In fact, one out of four Americans, 65 million, has some type of incurable sexually transmitted disease. Approximately two-thirds of new STD cases occur among those under 25 years of age. And if the teens in your church think that condoms will protect them, listen up. According to the U.S. Center for Disease Control, even if a person uses a condom every single time he or she has intercourse, there is still a 50% chance of contracting most of the major sexually transmitted diseases. you actually have better odds at playing Russian roulette. And you should know that condoms don't protect at all against the human papillomavirus, or HPV. It's believed that HPV is responsible for about 99.9% of cases of cervical cancer in the United States. But you're not going to hear a lot of this from these groups that are pushing the safe sex message, such as Planned Parenthood. Just check out Planned Parenthood's website for teens. It's called TeenWire. You will be amazed at the things that they are telling your children. One of the things they often tell kids is, well, if your parents are, you know, conservative religious people, they're probably, you know, backwards and bigoted, and you really don't want to be talking to them about this stuff. Check it out. Check out the TeenWire website and see some of the stuff that they're showing your kids. There's another danger that is lurking in some public schools that many parents don't know about, and that is gay activists targeting our children. I know that the issue of homosexuality is controversial in our culture, but let me just share this from an educational and a counseling perspective, from my perspective. In school districts across the country, gay activists have made major advances. In some states, kids as young as kindergarten are being taught that homosexuality, bisexuality, and transgender behavior is normal and natural. In many school districts, homosexual teachers openly share their lifestyle with their students, even introduce them to their gay lovers in the classroom. And students, Christian students in particular, who dare to suggest that homosexuality might be immoral or unhealthy, are called what? Homophobic, hateful, bigoted. In some states, teachers who have refused to teach pro-gay curriculum have been reprimanded, sent to mandatory tolerance training, or been fired. There's a revealing quote from Bob Chase, who is the past president of the National Teachers Association, National Education Association. It's the largest teachers union in the country. And in an interview with a gay newspaper, Mr. Chase said this: "Schools cannot be neutral when we're dealing with homosexual issues. I'm not talking about tolerance. I'm talking about acceptance." There is a very effective tactic that gay activists are introducing called the Gay Straight Alliance Club. These are in many of America's high schools, and they're sponsored by a group called the Gay Lesbian Straight Education Network, or GLSEN. And GLSEN claims that the goal of these clubs is to teach kids to be tolerant and prevent bullying. And of course, we all want that. No one wants to see a child bullied for any reason, whether they're gay or straight or short or obese or they wear glasses. But these clubs are doing a lot more than teaching tolerance. They're actually teaching impressionable, confused kids that they were born gay, that homosexuality is normal and natural. They're also encouraging kids to experiment with homosexual behavior and to engage in gay relationships. Now, GLSEN claims that it's all about tolerance, but here's a quote from an actual GLSEN teacher training workshop called Inclusive Kindergartners. And what they're doing here is lesbian teacher named Jackie Williams, and here's what she says to the teachers at this workshop. 5-year-old children are developing their superego. That's when the saturation process needs to begin. Well, gay activists may claim that they don't have an agenda, but I think quotes like that clearly illustrate that they do. And by the way, you may think that a conservative area of the country like this wouldn't have to worry about such things. Well, think again. Here are a few of the local high schools that have active gay straight alliances on campus. Now, I realize that a lot of you have kids in private school or a Christian school, but even if you do, many of their peers, many of their friends that are going to public school are being indoctrinated with this information. And I'm not saying that the school district or the board is behind this, I'm just saying that these schools are currently allowing active gay straight alliances, typically sponsored by a gay or lesbian teacher. Those schools look familiar to any of you? Yeah, the way I found those schools, I just went to the GLSEN website, and I have to admit I was a little unethical. I said I was a 16-year-old from Atlanta, And I wanted to know where I could find a gay straight alliance. And I just checked the two counties right here, and here's what popped up. Well, are you really getting depressed now? I'm sorry. I most parents I talk to, when I share this information with them, it really seems overwhelming. So let's turn a corner here. What can we do about some of these dangers that are facing our kids? What can we do about it? Well, first and foremost, don't despair. Don't despair. As believers, we know that our God is ultimately in control, and he has not given us a spirit of fear. In addition, let me share a few practical things that you can do to protect your kids and the kids in your congregation. Educate yourself about the risks. Stay informed about the issues that can impact your family and the families here at this church. Learn about youth culture. Find out what the schools in your area are teaching about sexuality. Learn if gay activists have made inroads into the school district and the curriculum, and if they're promoting a pro-gay agenda. If your child goes to a public school, go to school board meetings. If the board has begun to embrace some of the dangerous philosophies we've mentioned here, organize the parents in your congregation and object. Let your school board members know how you feel. And if they ignore your concerns or they blow you off, vote them out. You've got the numbers, parents. There's not that many parents that get active in the school board meetings. And in numbers, you can have a very loud voice. Before you leave today, make sure you talk to Randy and get on the Georgia Family Council's email list. Randy and his staff will keep you informed about the public policy issues in Georgia. And you also might want to sign up for Focus on the Family's daily Citizen Link email update. How many receive the Citizen Link email? Any of you? Real easy. Just go to citizenlink.com. Sign up once a day. We'll send you an email just once a day that gives you four or five of the major issues, stories, sometimes state-specific, that you should know about as parents. Let me also share a few parenting strategies with you that I think will help you inoculate your kids from some of these negative influences that we're talking about. Provide your kids with love, limits, and time. My friends, Dr. Henry Cloud and Dr. John Townsend, who are two Christian psychologists I went to school with, they wrote a book entitled Raising Great Kids. And in that book, they state that these three qualities are really the things that kids need most from their parents. Love, we all know. Our kids need our affection. They need to be affirmed by us. They need to be encouraged. They need our hugs and our kisses. They need to know we're in their corner. We're their biggest cheerleader. But in this day and age, some parents are more reluctant to enforce limits. In other words, where does your child's will stop and yours begins? There are many parents in today's world that engage in what I call pushover parenting, because they want their kids more than anything else to be their best buddy. They want to be liked by their kids. So they don't want to do anything that would cause their child not to like them. Well, unfortunately, that leads to a real sense of entitlement, and it sets your child up for frustration and failure in the real world. And then finally, time. And this, I know, is a real issue, folks. I'm sure it is at this church. We've got our kids involved in a lot of different activities, and we're involved in a lot of different activities, work and church and hobbies. But the fact is, your kids don't need another activity. All the research points to the fact that what your kids really need is quality time, not just quality time, but quantity time with you and with their siblings, and if extended family is available, grandma and grandpa. We know from the research that families who eat dinner together five nights a week, those children do better academically, they do better as far as their emotional health, they're less likely to get involved in drugs and alcohol, they're less likely to get involved in criminal behavior. I could go on and on and on. But the kids that eat dinner with their families less than three nights a week, it's no protective. It's not that the eating dinner itself is the panacea. It's something that's qualitatively different about those families, and they're actually communicating over the dinner table. And, you know, sometimes, folks, I know this may involve making some sacrifices as a family or limiting your child to, say, oh, God forbid, two extracurricular activities a semester. Little Johnny will never survive. Well, little Johnny will survive, and he'll actually probably be a lot less stressed out if you limit the number of activities that he's involved in. Clearly state your expectations. Make sure your kids know your standards regarding drugs and alcohol, sexual purity, and internet use. It's also critical for you to model responsible behavior in these areas yourself. What type of TV shows and cable movies do you watch? What type of DVDs do you rent? What's your attitude toward alcohol and the use of prescription drugs? Give some serious thought to those things because our kids are watching us like hawks. Keep the lines of communication open. Some parents have a tendency to preach at their kids and never really listen to them. Our kids need to know that they can talk to us about anything, anything at all, even difficult issues like drugs and sexuality. They need to know that we are truly interested in what's going on in their lives and that we'll come alongside them when they are struggling or when they're facing temptation. Now, when I say they can talk to us about anything, that doesn't mean there may not be consequences if they tell us something where they've been involved in some kind of risky or dangerous behavior. But they need to know that it's safe to come to mom and dad and that they can talk to us about these things. Make faith relevant in your home. Boy, you know, I appreciate this church so much and the fact that there's a major discipleship push at Perimeter. Because this is probably one of the most important things of all. Research conducted at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill showed that teens who are actively involved in a faith community are much less likely to be involved in some of the risky behaviors that we've talked about. In today's world, getting your teen or your preteen involved in a healthy, discipleship-oriented youth group is more critical than ever. That's because our postmodern relativistic society is gobbling up Christian kids by the millions. It's estimated that 3 out of 4 Christian teens who attend a secular college or university will leave the faith by the time they graduate from college. 75%. That, folks, is tragic. That's why it is so important for us to be intentional about passing on our faith to our kids. If our walk doesn't match our talk, our kids are going to see our Christianity as hypocritical and meaningless. It can't just be a Sunday morning faith. We can't compartmentalize our lives in that way. And here is a hard question that all of us should ask ourselves. And I ask this question of myself. Are we modeling the fruit of the Spirit in our relationship with our spouse and with our kids? Are those relationships characterized by love, joy, gentleness, patience, kindness, self-control? If not, what are they characterized by? And finally, pray, and then pray some more. Pray for your kids, pray with your kids. As you pray, ask God to help you provide your children with the kind of unfailing love and firm moral guidance that they are going to need to survive in this culture. Now, at Focus on the Family, one of our jobs is to come alongside you in your parenting journey. Let me tell you about just a few of the things that we have that will help you with this task. If you haven't been to the Focus on the Family website, it was revamped in the past year, go to focusonthefamily.com and click on the My Family link. You can sign up for specific parenting resources based on the age of your children, whatever stage they're in, if they're babies, toddlers, school-age kids, preteens, teenagers, college students. We'll help you with that. We also have online parenting forums, which have just exploded in the last couple of years, where parents like you are dialoguing with each other all around the world on various issues. And maybe parents that are further down the line in a particular issue can offer you some practical, godly advice on what worked for them. We have a special parents edition of the Focus on the Family magazine, which is free, by the way. Just go to the website and sign up for it, and we'll send it to you. We have a great parenting curriculum on DVD called The Essentials of Discipline. This takes all of Dr. Dobson's classic parenting wisdom from the last 30 years, but it puts it into a really vibrant, exciting new format, using real-life families, real-life situation, fun animation, and coming out later this year, The Essentials of Parenting DVD series, which will cover some other areas of parenting, such as faith development. You can find this again on our website. I mentioned Plugged In Online. The Plugged In magazine, it went away because of, well, just like everybody else, Focus on the Family is being hurt by the economy, and so some of our magazines had to be eliminated, but they've gone to the web, and you can find PluggedInOnline.com. It is the most popular website at Focus on the Family. We have 1 million visits per month from parents who are desperate to know when their 13-year-old daughter comes and says, "Mom, there's this great new movie. All my friends are going to see it. It's got Brad Pitt." And you go to Plugged In, you go, "Oh, honey, I don't think you should go see that because, oh, it says here that, oh, these messages would really not be good for you. How about if we go to this movie instead?" So Plugged In, if you haven't checked it out, please do so. Video games, music, TV, and films reviewed there. Drugs and alcohol, we talked about that. We have a great new program called How to Drug Proof Your Kids. It's modeled after Focus on the Family Australia's program. They actually started this several years ago. It became so successful that the Australian government partnered with Focus Australia to train thousands of parents to drug-proof their children. And you can learn more about it at drugproofyourkids.com. I mentioned tech issues and how I'm sure many of you are kind of feeling overwhelmed by all the tech stuff. Best book you can buy, Logged On and Tuned Out, A Non-Techie's Guide to Parenting a Tech-Savvy Generation. You will learn everything you need to know about your kids' tech world and how to provide them guidance and set up some controls to keep them safe. I mentioned kids falling away from the faith. Well, we have a great apologetics conference with some of the top speakers in the country called The Big Dig. Typically, it's at Focus on the Family, sometimes in other cities. You can learn more about that at the website. And then we have a Christian worldview set on CD and DVD called Stand, which will help equip your kids with to be able to defend the faith. Here's the website and the phone number. You can call us Monday through Friday. In fact, if you need a counselor, a Christian counselor, we have about 12 licensed therapists on staff who'd be glad to talk to you about whatever you're going through in your family, and then they'll refer you to a Focus-approved licensed Christian therapist in your local community. We have thousands of those Christian therapists on our list. Just call us. Well, let me leave you with a challenge tonight. We've talked a lot about protecting your kids from negative influences, but I want to encourage you to go beyond that, to begin to cast a positive, Christ-centered vision for your kids. I believe the body of Christ needs to become countercultural in the 21st century. And what I mean by that, one of the ways that we can become countercultural is to stop buying into the world's definition of success. The world says what's most important is that our kids achieve academically and athletically, that they're popular, that they're good looking, that they're in the right clubs, they go to the right school, they're in the right organizations. Not that those things are bad, but there's much more to our faith than that. Jesus calls us to a much different standard, one which involves things like service and self-sacrifice, compassion for those who are unpopular or unattractive or lonely. Those are the values, the most important values, that we should be stressing to our children on a daily basis. Any questions about any of the things we covered? Yes, ma'am.
One question I have is, as a Christian woman and my husband, how do you teach your boys how to handle bullies? Hmm. You know, if you turn the other cheek, you become more and more of a target for a bully. And it's something we've encountered over and over with our fourth grader.
You know, bullying is probably one of the most complicated issues that parents have to deal with in this day and age, because bullying has changed. It used to be you had the schoolyard bully pick on the kid. Now you've got cyberbullying. Now you've got situations where, you know, you raise a stink and a parent in the school threatens to sue you. You know, or the school doesn't want to get involved in litigation, so they don't want to get their hands in it. I personally believe, you know, when Jesus says turn the other cheek, he's not saying let the guy hit you. Okay, that's a misinterpretation of that scripture. I think the first thing parents need to do if bullying occurs is be a strong advocate for their child with the school. And that means you go right to the source, you go to the teacher and the principal, you sit down, you have a nice, respectful dialogue, you don't yell and scream, even though, of course, you're going to be upset, but you need to actually document what's occurred. So you don't just say, well, you know, Bobby said he got picked on by this kid. You need to say, on this date, this child did this, he did this, he did this, and you need to go and you know, put the fear of God into the administration. That's the first thing you need to do. I also think, and parents here may disagree with me on this, but I think that in this day and age, if a child is in a situation where there is a very aggressive peer group and physical violence is a danger, I think that kid should get some self-defense training. I have a friend who is a Christian black belt. I mean, he's a fifth-degree black belt, and I ain't going to mess with him. Now, that's not a focus on the family necessarily position, but I believe that if a child is in that situation, they should be availed of the training they need. But really, the first responsibility, it lies with the parents advocating, and then the school needs to follow through. And if you don't, you take it higher. You go to the district, or you go to the board, and you get some action. So, anyway, the question.
If your child is, how do you train your children, like when they're getting into the preteen, teen age, and they're with friends, and maybe you don't have the technology in your home, or things are locked down, or you're on to things, but then they get together with their friends who have all kinds of access. What do you do in that situation? How do you prepare your kids well for that?
Yeah, that's a great question. One of the reasons I think one of the reasons we can't just say no when it comes to technology is that our kids will not learn to use it responsibly, and they will not learn self-control, and they will not learn what websites are good and how to communicate online safely. Vicki Courtney, the woman that wrote the book I mentioned, Logged On and Tuned Out, she says that if we have a total lockdown and we don't allow our kids to, you know, do the social networking sites or the texting or whatever, all we're doing is delaying what's eventually going to happen. Because as soon as they go off to college, all bets are off. But now they've never had any experience with this, and they've never had any guidance with this. So they really get into big trouble because we haven't been guiding them along through the process. So I believe we do need to allow them graduated exposure with our guidance, with a contract. I think an internet contract, and that can extend to when you are with your friends. So if you agree and you get your child to agree that here are our, you know, parameters on texting, internet use, cell phone photos, oh my gosh, that's a huge, ugly issue right now with kids sending each other naked photos on their cell phones. By the way, that's considered child pornography, and many police agencies are cracking down on that. But to actually come up with a contract and say that this extends not just in our home, but this extends to you when you're with your friends. And to also to help your child know that if they're in a situation where they feel peer pressure to, you know, get involved with whatever the other kids are doing, that help them rehearse some phrases to get themselves out of that situation. And if they're really in a situation where someone's looking at pornography, they just need to call you and just say, Mom, something's going on here. I need to come home. And you need to be willing to come in without judging. You did the wise thing, honey. You were smart. You made the right move. I'm so proud of you. So, but get Vicki's book. I think it's the best thing out there. I really do. It'll walk you through the whole process.
What about talking to the parents of your kids' peers?
Oh, that is so critical, Randy. I can't stress enough how important it is to know the parents of your kids' friends. And you need, in this day and age, you need to be asking some very specific questions. If you've got, one of your children has a friend and you don't know those parents, and your 14-year-old son is going over to that house on a regular basis, you need to sit down with those folks and lovingly, kindly, but firmly say, hey, I'm so glad that our boys are good friends. We have certain values in our home. We have certain rules as far as the internet and drugs and alcohol. What sort of rules have you established? And if they look at you like, huh? Okay, wrong answer. your child isn't going over to that house. Or if they say, oh, you seem really judgmental and legalistic. We just allow our children to choose their own values. Then again, that's not where your child should be. What you do then is you invite that child over to your house and you can be a good influence. Think about the impact of the body of Christ on all of these kids, especially latchkey kids, where they come home to an empty house every day. Think about the impact we could have if we invited those, if they're friends of our children, we invite them over to our house and they see what a loving Christian family is all about. And they see parents that are providing their kids with sound moral guidance, but not doing it in a mean, authoritarian way, but being firm and speaking the truth in love. What a great blessing you are offering those children, the children of your kid, the friends of your kids. So Randy, I'm so glad you mentioned that. Be very, very wary, because there are so many different, there are many families where they've got cable access and it's porn and you're never going to know it. They have no limits on internet use and their 14-year-old is going on websites that you would not believe, and your kid's going to come home and, Dad, guess what I saw? So you need to ask those questions and do it in a loving way.
And I asked the question selfishly because when my daughter was 8, we thought we had communicated pretty clearly with parents of one of her peers, and she came home doing pole dancing moves. That is no lie, because they had watched Charlie's Angels Full Throttle or something. We thought we'd had the conversation. So we said, oh, I guess she won't be going over there anymore. But anyway, yeah, you do have to talk to parents.
Those pole dancing moves, they just, you know.
Yeah, a little distressing.
Yeah.
Questions?
I really like your idea of the contract. Is there anything on Focus that where we can go to view or get some ideas on?
That may be online. We have an actual analyst who handles the whole area of online usage and pornography. His name's Daniel Weiss. And I know he's written one. Whether it's available online, I don't know. But if you, I can actually talk to you afterwards and give you his name. It may actually be there. There's a website. Focus has a website called focusonsocialissues.com. Just one long word, Focus on Social Issues. And if you, that's all the major issues, whether we're talking about abortion or pornography or gambling or whatever it might be. If you click on the pornography link there, you'll see a bunch of articles, and the internet contract may be in there. I also know that Vicki Courtney, the woman that wrote the book I mentioned, I believe she has an internet contract and some suggestions on ways to back that up. With your child. So yes, I think from an early age now, the average age that a child is stumbling on internet pornography images, I hate to say this, I've heard just recently, it's like 6. I mean, that's shocking to me. But the pornographers, what they do is they change the URL just slightly. So a kid is going, I want to find out more about the president, so I'm going to go to whitehouse.com. Whitehouse.com is a porn site. Whitehouse.gov is the White House site, but a kid doesn't know that. And so they'll take things like Barbie or Barney and just change it a little bit, and the kid ends up going someplace you don't want him to go. So, great idea.
If you don't find something on their website, bear in mind we are good friends at Georgia Family Council and Focus on the Family. We do have an internet behavior agreement on our website. You can go to georgiafamily.org and go ahead and just enter in the search engine internet safety. And then you'll see a link for an internet behavior agreement if you don't find one through Focus. So, but go to Focus on the Family site. All right.
Randy basically taught us everything we know.
No.
Any other questions?
I have a question. We talk a lot about different internet sites that you go to, but YouTube is very pervasive mm-hmm. with the younger kids.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen how you safeguard that that search engine. I was just wondering between both of y'all
I don't think they've set up any safeguards. Is anyone aware if YouTube has any safeguards? That's something that I talked about, but it doesn't currently exist. And you're right, because more and more kids, hey, their friends say, there's a great thing on YouTube. Well, they go and maybe what they're looking at is innocent. It's the dog with two heads or whatever. But then on that same page, there's stuff that takes them somewhere else, and then before. Then you're into pole dancing or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I would say YouTube is not I would not allow kids to just go to YouTube unsupervised. I don't think it's, by the way, speaking of supervision, This is my opinion, but there are others who agree with me. Do not allow your child to have a computer with internet access in their own room. Put that computer in a common area, you know, the kitchen, the den. It makes it a little inconvenient, but at least you are hovering, you're in that area. Putting a computer in a child's room with unfettered internet access. Dr. Dobson used this as an illustration, which I think is really key. Imagine it's 10 o'clock at night, and you hear this pounding on your front door. And you open the door, and there's this greasy-looking guy there. And he says, I want to come in and spend some time with your kids. What are you going to do? You're going to slam the door in his face and call the cops. But by allowing a child to have unfettered internet access in their room, you're allowing that greasy, disgusting man to come through their computer screen and maybe solicit them for sex. Yes, sir.
I say this with some hesitation, but in my experience is that some of the problem is other Christian families. We like to think, well, you know, there's a church family that I can send my child to and whatnot, but this church family may have very lax standards. And the second comment is in my opinion, the ultimate goal is to help your children develop wisdom and sound judgment, not a bunch of rules, because they will find a way around the rules.
It's without a doubt. You know,
learning to make sound judgments and understand the reason why is the ultimate goal. So it's just a point of comment.
No, and I really appreciate that. For the first part of your comment, yes, just because a family is a church family, you can't make assumptions, because in this day and age, unfortunately, there's plenty of folks that attend church that don't have a well-developed Christian worldview. On the second issue, Focus on the Family believes so strongly in teaching discernment. And that plug-in website I talked about, the guys that run that whole department, the Youth Culture Division, they are so passionate about teaching kids to be discerning. And not just, they found, and the research bears this out, the just say no thing doesn't work. You have to have a rationale, you have to start from an early age. And one of the best ways to do that is through teachable moments. You're sitting there watching a football game and some beer commercial comes on with inappropriate, you know, scantily clad girls or whatever, and you have a conversation about that. And you talk about, you know, what is noble and what is pure and what does God want us to put into our minds and how what we put into our minds ends up either helping us or harming us. So, yes. And by the way, speaking of that discernment issue, this summer we're going to be recording a broadcast with the youth culture team, Bob Walaszewski, who's the director of that department, an actual focused broadcast on teaching, helping parents to teach their kids discernment when it comes to media usage. So be listening for that probably towards the end of the summer. Yes.
Hi there.
Hi.
To piggyback on the discernment, I think that is a very important point. One of the struggles that with parents of teenagers, 14 and 17-year-old, 15 and 17-year-old, if you want to watch your kids end up in convulsions, take their phone. And it's more than the internet in our family, because the phone is their lifelink.
Yeah.
They think that they all live in each other's back pockets. They're on call all the time. And certainly we have rules in place. And the challenge that we find is that because the kids don't have any boundaries, this has moved so fast, this technology, they have no boundaries. There are things these kids will say to each other in text messages that they would never consider saying in person. A lot of testing in the waters. And we've encountered that. Our kids know that we will pick up the phone at any time. We will look at text messages. We say, this. Tell Facebook pages. If you're going to ask my daughter out for a date, I'm going to go to the Facebook page first thing.
Right.
And we're going to get an assessment of who this is that wants to be with my daughter for that evening. I just would like you to speak to the point, and this was an opportunity for me to it's about how important it is in this new communication.
Yeah, you're doing everything right.
Oh, I didn't say that.
No, what the behaviors that you just mentioned are the right thing to do. Because you can't make assumptions anymore, and kids, there's the anonymity that goes along with text messages and social networking sites, and kids will, and the research shows this, even adults, they will do things and say things that they would never consider. I mean, I'm sure a few of you have had experiences with emails, even at work, where you've said something and then somehow it got forwarded to someone. Oh my gosh. So there is something about electronic communication where it breaks down barriers. You're not seeing the person, you're not face to face. And I mentioned the cell phone photos issue. This is just, I mean, this is becoming, there's new research out. This is really troubling, folks. The vast majority of high school students and college students now see no problem with sending naked photos of themselves to someone they're dating, a friend with benefits. It's called sexting. And the research is now showing that it starts usually in high school, progresses into college, and there is a there is an effect whereby kids, young people, are being desensitized. And so what was formerly considered offensive or shocking is no longer. And this tends to, like any addiction, tends to draw them into more dangerous types of behavior involving those types of images and what they might engage in. And it's just tragic. You know, technology is such a wonderful thing in that it provides us with so many opportunities that we never had. I mean, just think about MapQuest. My gosh, you know, just I need to get from here to there. But any technology, because man's human heart is darkened, and because we have a sin nature, we will take the best things that we can come up with as in science or technology and use it for dark purposes. The most money made on the internet, billions and billions of dollars, is made off pornography. So, yes, you have to do those things. And
the last thing is, you all aren't aware of it, but there are things called usage controls.
Yeah.
One thing, find out the cell companies are doing, and you can stop your phone nonsense. Just turn that thing on and turn it off, and you would like them to be able to have access to people.
Well, and this, you know, not even on a moral issue, but just on a time issue and a balance of life issue, I really believe that we ought to limit our kids' use of the cell phone and texting. And that, as you said, they'll go into withdrawal. But I think to explain the rationale that, you know, we want you to have a balanced life, and God has more for you than spending 8 hours a day texting your friends. I'm just amazed. I'm sure all of you have seen this. I'll go to a sporting event. I was with my son's baseball game. He's 6 years old. And there were these teenage girls there with, I think their little brothers were on the team. And they're all just, you know, sitting there the whole game texting. And they're totally oblivious to anything else around them. And so I think, in addition to having the rules about, you know, the moral issues of how we communicate online, what we send, we also need to have rules about the time. How much time do you allow them to be on the cell phone each day, at least when they're at home? I would say never allow your, I don't know what the law is in Georgia, but don't allow your child to be talking on the cell phone in the car, even hands-free. The research is showing that's very dangerous. Have a contract with them about if the phone rings, they let it go to voicemail, or they pull over and they make the call there. But and this is going to make a lot of you upset, or you're going to think I'm crazy, but I personally believe that television is one of the biggest detriments to the Christian church in the 21st century. Okay, a few people agree. The number of Christian families that spend from 8 p.m. to 11 or longer every night in front of the tube when they should be spending time with their kids, playing board games, reading books together, having devotions, having neighbors over, engaging in real life activities. And television has dumbed down America, and it's tragic. And I wish some Christian leaders and some major pastors would start saying from the pulpit, turn off your TV. Limit it to an hour a night and make sure that that 1 hour is something that's beneficial, the History Channel or Discovery or whatever it is. So anyway, that's my soapbox. But
yes, we have 7-year-old twins, and...
I'm sorry.
Thank you. But they go to their dad's every other weekend, and they have two, how old are they?
9 and 12
stepsisters that go to public school and do not go to church. And the first 2 days when they come home, it's like we're having to reprogram them. Mm. How can we protect them while they're there? And we pray. The girls and I pray every time we're on our way there. We pray before we leave that God will protect their little eyes and hearts and, you know, everything like that. But we don't have cable or anything like that at home. But they go to daddy's and they have HBO and everything else they can imagine. What can we do?
Well, unfortunately, at 7 years of age, the major responsibility falls to the caregiver, to the parent, and you're doing what you need to do, but your ex is not, and I think...
That's the reason he's my ex.
Well, and step-family situations can be incredibly complicated. I don't need to tell you that. You're in the middle of it. If there's a way to have a calm, rational discussion, you're shaking your head like it's not possible.
We've tried.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there's no easy answer there. If he's got visitation rights and he's not going to give them proper moral guidance, at seven, it is kind of out of your control. You do everything you can in that home, and you use teachable moments, and you talk about when they come home and they say, oh, we saw this, or they're using this language. You don't just yell and scream and crack down.
It's an attitude. They have the attitude.
Think about what they're seeing on television. Think about the attitude on the average sitcom. Think about the way children talk to their parents, husbands talk to their wives, and vice versa. I mean, it's just that attitude, is that sarcasm, the cynicism, and the just tearing one another down. It's so ungodly. But at seven, it's hard. They don't have the intellectual capacity, the abstract ability to be able to go, oh, this is not good for me. So it really is up to him. And I would just say, hang in there, lovingly try to speak truth to him.
Would two weekends a month do major damage to them? We just worry about it so much.
Yeah. That's one of the questions for our counseling department, because they have a step-family expert. Call our 800-A-FAMILY number and tell them you want to talk to somebody about step-family issues, because that's tough. I know we have a lot of step-families in here, too. So,
So my family does watch TV occasionally, and we do have all the parental controls on. My kids complain constantly about having to punch in the passcode, and apparently they haven't guessed it yet. But even when we're watching the Discovery Channel or whatever, I think the commercials are a lot worse than the actual shows in many, many cases. Very bad. Do you know of any commercial blocking technology?
Well, the answer there is a little expensive, but it's TiVo. TiVo is the way to go to get rid of those commercials.
Well, TiVo still has the fast forward. It doesn't actually block.
Yeah. Anybody know of technology that eliminates? Does TiVo have an eliminator where you can actually... get rid of this?
It's actually a legal issue. I was just wondering if anything at Focus or GFC is addressing that.
The only thing that I know of when it comes to films is there's that, was it Clear Play Machine, which is legal. But in lieu of that, you're right. Sometimes we'll be watching a great show that's very wholesome and educational and a commercial comes on. Again, I think we need to start teaching our kids about having that conversation at the moment. And one of my friends who works in the area of sexual purity, in fact, I think he was just recently here. Jim Burns was here a couple weeks ago, maybe. Did he talk about bouncing your eyes? Did he talk about that to you? About teaching kids to bounce, especially boys, to bounce their eyes when they see an image that's unwholesome. Jim has a new book out called The Purity Code, which actually is something he's been using with his family for a long, long time. But that's the opportunity to teach that discernment we talked about earlier. I wish I could give you a simple solution, but unfortunately, other than the Weather Channel, does the Weather Channel have bad commercials? No.
Storm stories. Tonight at 8, Tornado Alley.
How's that? Are you that good? Okay.
A little off the technology topic, but I was wondering how prevalent you've found it. Our older teenagers are beginning to run into this laws of attraction. The book, The Secret... which is really seems to be sucking a lot of their friends in and things like that. And I didn't know if that's more an isolated thing or if you're seeing that as you travel or if Focus on the Family has begun to experience any of that. And I've been kind of looking for materials to sort of have a Christian counterpoint to that. Mm-hmm. Some of the religions that the mainstream Protestants would consider cult,
right,
that we have
right.
sort of counter answers to. Is there anything that's beginning to develop along the lines?
Yeah,
for
there,
laws
there
of
are,
attraction?
And some of the youth apologetics experts are developing. They're responding to those things. The Plugged In website would be the place to go because I think they have a article on The Secret. And there's a lot of there's other things that are out there now. Chick Lit, which is this, it's books like paperbacks and series for they're really aimed at preteen girls, but they're full of just rancid sexual. Material and so in addition to the the worldview stuff, the spiritual stuff. There's also just this sexual garbage out there that these girls are picking up and reading and voraciously, unfortunately. So, yes, we are responding to that. And so I'd go to the plugin website, be your first best bet.
Can you put on the back of the postage stamp, what's the secret? What is that?
Can you explain it? Because I really haven't read it. I've talked to some parents that have mentioned it.
Yeah, it's basically a book that sort of incorporates the whole concept of the laws of attraction, the whole positive thinking. They teach these children that if they just think positive, they can manifest a better life, and that everything that's positive in life can come from within themselves. It's in there. And they use founding fathers as part of that and some historical figures along that line. And so the secret is sort of
meditation,
as Rachel's saying. But it's becoming very, I'm finding it that kids that go down like to Buckhead and Five Points, there are people down there like at these coffee houses that are sort of, back in the day when we would think about the coffee house, the poets and things like that would come on. These people are down there espousing these kind of things. Mm-hmm. And their children are coming home going, oh, this guy's so smart. And, oh, he's got all these answers and his life's so positive. And I'm like, well, what's he doing down at Five Points, you know, with a panhandle in his hand if it's working so well? You know, but the kid looks right past that, and he's like, no, he's such a great guy. And we're like, you know.
It's really a big disconnect there.
It's such an, you know, there's no accountability to it. It gets the kids off the hook of having any sense of responsibility or any judgment. Gives them that nice world view, a comfort zone. So I think it's very attractive for them to fall into it. But I just see it becoming more and more prevalent, especially for the teenagers that are wandering around. They get in their groups. And one kid, it's like a little virus, you know, just forget the computer. This is just word of mouth. And the more my kids come home, the more I'm hearing about it. And then we're hearing about it from their parents because the kids are taking it home to the parents. And I think, especially with the economic times down, it really becomes attractive for people. And they've gotten fired, having a problem making their bills. And all of a sudden, well, if I just think positive, right. You know. But then there's a whole indoctrination program where it's levels, you know, they sort of.
Yeah, it's like Gnostic thinking, really. There's nothing new. It's Scientology. It's Christian Science. It's the power of the mind. By the way, Focus on the Family is developing a great new apologetics series. How many have heard about the Truth Project that we do? How many have been through a Truth Project group? Anyone here? If you get a chance, go to our website, thetruthproject.org, which is a 12-week Christian worldview curriculum on DVD. This year, we're going to be developing a teen edition of that. It's called the College Bound Edition. It's to prepare juniors and seniors in high school for what they'll be encountering on the typical secular college campus, how to defend their faith, how to answer objections to Christianity, and how to live a morally upright life on a college campus. Thetruthproject.org is the site. If you go there, click on, there's a little thing that says view the trailer at the top. Click that on. You get a sense of what it's all about. So,
a lot of parents have already suggested to me that I should open a Facebook account. Mm. I have not done it simply because I barely have time to read emails. So shall I feel guilty for not doing it? Because they said I'm very far behind.
Yeah, well, I'm far behind too because I don't have one and all of my friends are... that's your own choice. There are some advantages to that if you have a teenager because then you can, you know, become their Facebook friend and do all that. It's not necessary. More and more adults are doing the Facebook thing. I think it's a tool that can be used for good. It can also be used for evil like anything else. So I wouldn't feel guilty.
Let's pray. Heavenly Father... I think all of us are in the same boat. That's why we showed up here. We are in desperate need of wisdom in raising our children. We would give our lives for our kids, and yet so often we're not exactly sure how to direct those young lives. So, Father, thank you for Bill, and thank you for the message that he communicated. Father, more than anything else, thank you for loving us, sending your son to die for us. We pray that we will seek you first and seek the wisdom that you offer as we attempt to raise these blessings that you've placed in our hands. Help us to be grateful that even in the difficult times, we can know that we are the ones who have been chosen to raise this child or these children at this moment in time. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.